Hey, welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping Podcast. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
How are you, Kara? It's Sunday. What's today's date? Like May, I don't know, 15th-ish? 16th, something like that?
I know it's May. May 16th.
May 16th, 2021. We're in the heart of swarm season right now, which we're going to get into. We're going to talk about swarms. We're going to talk about what's going on. But hey, what's going on with you? How are you? We had a pretty busy Sunday today, huh?
Yeah, we did. We've been a busy weekend. We spent all weekend tearing up invasives. And then planting non-invasives and planting native species.
I got to say, it's been really, it's interesting watching you work in this regard because it's really is like you're doing something so selfless because, you know, our goal is not to be living in this current, our current little farm. We're trying to go somewhere else because this is a flood zone situation. But before we leave, Kara's like, I want to get rid of a lot of these invasives. I want to plant a lot of pollinator friendly native plants. And like, it looks great already, but you're digging out stuff that looks great and putting in stuff that's going to be great.
Yeah, that's like a big thing. I took a Penn State Extension course, like the woods in your backyard, and it totally shifted just my idea of everything. And they kept reiterating, green is not good. Just because it's green doesn't mean it's good. Just because it's beautiful doesn't mean it's good.
Are you trying to make me yell at people with green lawns again?
And so we look at things and we're like, oh yeah, there's things that are growing, and it's just a whole other way to look at things. And so my mentality has been to leave the space way, 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 way better than we found it, and just a little at a time. And I'm never going to get to everything. It's just, I mean, if we lived here for 50 years, I could, but you know, just a little at a time. And once you start removing invasives, I'm finding that the next year, less are coming back. It's easier to pull them up. And, you know, it's a big undertaking, but it's also so rewarding. Like, you know, we're stewards of this land that we've been.
I mean, we talked about a lot about it last episode about, you know, the biggest thing you can do is plant native plants. If you're trying to save the bees, plant native plants. Get rid of some of the invasives. Like, and it's not even necessarily, some of the invasives we're getting rid of are great for honeybees, but they're not great for all the native bees. And our number one goal when we're looking at landscaping and looking at where we live is to make sure the native bees and the native pollinators are getting the hookup.
Yeah. So, and the biggest thing that I found, I mentioned it last podcast when we talked about, you know, what to plant and all this kind of stuff, and the Seek app. So there are things growing, and I used to spend so much time like trying to look in
tree books. Oh my God, we have these tree books.
Oh, that's impossible. Forget about it.
I
mean,
I like love the Audubon stuff, but like, come on, it's impossible.
It's impossible to identify.
You would text our friend that is an arborist. I think that's what they're called. Arborist?
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah.
For some reason, it doesn't sound right, but yeah, I think it's it.
But you would text a friend of ours, or more like a friend of a friend, and ask him, and he would nail it like almost every time.
All the time.
It might take a few days for him to respond.
Yeah. But so this,
Seek,
I saw all these plants popping up and I was like, what are these? And Seek told me they were pokeweed and invasive, dug them all up. And then there was like a tree growing and it was like pear. And I was like, oh, cool, pear. Looked it up, invasive, cut it down, you know? So that's such a good, not only to learn about your area, but to learn what is invasive and what is native.
I wanted to light this candle. We've been making all of these beeswax candles. For, what is it, for a wedding shower?
Baby shower.
Baby shower. So somebody asked for us to make like 70 of these little, I don't know what you call these things.
Skep.
Skep, but like what, like a tea candle?
Tea candle,
but it's a little big. I mean, it's a little bigger than a tea candle, but so I got to make like 70 of these things, and every once in a while I mess one up, and it's like, sweet, we got one that we're going to, we can burn ourselves and not feel bad about.
Yeah, and beeswax candles set off, what, negative ions?
Yeah, I don't fully understand what it means, but they produce negative ions. Remember we were looking up, like, I think we were on vacation up in Maine.
I don't know.
We're somewhere and we were like, man, just when we're around moving water, it's just like, it puts us in a good mood. Like, it just feels so great. And then I remember we looked up like moving water feeling good. And it was like moving water produces negative ions, which lead to like increased happiness. And so does beeswax when it burns.
We didn't look it up. It was that show with Zac Efron. It was a good show. Don't be embarrassed.
I don't know. Shout out Zac Efron. What's up, dog? I haven't seen him in the gym in a while. Yeah. You know, always hitting the gym early with him. But yeah, so I thought, what better time to light this than while we're doing this podcast?
So negative ions are believed to produce biochemical reactions that increase levels of the mood chemical serotonin, helping to alleviate depression, relieve stress, and boost our daytime energy.
Yeah, so that sounds wonderful. Shout out me lighting this beeswax candle. It's going to be the best episode yet.
Here we go.
So what are we up to on the farm right now? So we mentioned we're doing a lot of the planting, and shout out Cara Jo Skincare and all the people that placed orders in April over $50 because they all got a tree or a pollinator friendly bush. So far we've planted eight of them.
They didn't get one. They planted one.
in their name or in somebody else's name.
So we have
name.
19 to plant.
Yeah.
It's quite an undertaking, but it's awesome.
Unfortunately, it's not just planting. It's like ripping out things so we can plant. So we've been like ripping out. What's the name? Microflora?
Multiflora rose.
Multiflora rose.
Bitch of a plant, man.
It reminds me of Forsythia. But it's got thorns, and it is a little more aggressive the way it seems to grow and
it
spread.
It blooms, and it's beautiful. It has like these open...
Oh, yeah, it's like a little white rose-looking kind of thing.
And they're
things,
open,
right?
So pollinators can get to them, but again, it's honeybees go to them. And so we're planting buttonbush if you live... I think we talked about this last time, but good. If you want to learn about that kind of stuff, you can listen to the last podcast.
We expanded our chicken coop area a little bit. We bought a second... So the biggest thing problem we have with our chickens is just predators. And our dog Kima she's awesome, but she's really great at watching them. However, if we let them just free range, some will go to like one side of the property and some will go to the other, and that's when foxes are
pretty much foxes.
Yeah. I mean, raccoons have gotten them at night, but during the day, like around dusk or like a little like 4 o'clock, we've seen some fox activity in our area. It's like 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. I see them.
So we have electric fence.
Movable electric fence just to keep them in an area. But we felt bad. Like it wasn't as big of an area as we wanted. So we went and got another electric fence, and dude, they have the pad now. It's such a hookup.
And it's not even that we felt bad. They kept flying out and we were like, you got to stay in here. We're trying to keep you alive.
So that's been cool. Owning chickens, it kind of goes hand in hand. I think a lot of beekeepers also have chickens.
Yeah, they talk about like feeding the brood to any brood you cut out, beeswax you cut out.
Yeah, we're always given like random Burkholm to the chickens. They love it.
I swear when I come over in my bee suit, they're like, there's something special happening. Go over to her right now.
But yeah, we were giving one of our chickens like a month or so ago Monistat 7 because it had like a yeast infection in its crop.
Yeah, it had sauerkraut.
So Kara kept having to go to CVS and buy yeast infection creams and stuff.
Yeah, I was like, is there self-checkout available?
And I do appreciate that you were like, I'll go get it. You don't have to get it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but it works. I mean, if you have chickens and they have sauerkraut, get the suppositories.
And you put it up their butt?
No.
Oh, you
just
don't.
put it down up your their butt? Throat. Oh, it works like a charm.
So yeah, the chickens are just loving life. Springtime is just so fun everywhere, and just seeing them just flourish and just, we like kind of meadow our grass and we let them trim the grass down, and then we move their fencing every few weeks. It's really great.
Chickens bring me so much joy.
So we've been splitting all these hives and we just have been getting all these swarms. And then all of a sudden you look and you go like, shit, we need boxes. Mm-hmm. And I made a lot of bottom boards and I made a lot of migratory lids over winter. But I knew like we still have more boxes. So we made another like, I don't know, 10 or 15 boxes. And then we just painted them. And all we did was we just primed them with white. And then, we got a surprise visit from some friends that I hadn't seen in forever. And, while they were over, I was like, hey, do you guys want to paint some bee boxes? And like, I thought maybe they'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. And it, like 5 minutes later, they'd be done. Dude, we sat and just hung out, and for like 2 hours, they put effort into painting these boxes, and they came out
amazing.
So awesome.
It was art, and they used spray paint.
Shout out Dan and Tori. So awesome.
Yeah, and it was relaxing just watching them, and they were taking, it was nuts. They were taking this painter's tape and layering it, and like they would spray paint, and I'm like, oh, that looks awesome. And then they would do another layer. I'm like, oh, why are they like covering it up? And then when they took off the paint, it's beautiful. Amazing. I didn't even know like art could be done with spray paint like that. Like it's, yeah, I'm like, this is like a work of art on RB boxes.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I mean, our friend Jenna is doing one. Our friend Adrian from Cerna Sauces did one. Yeah, and he it's did a cool so one. Good.
Yeah.
He used painter's tape. I think actually Jenna's using painter's tape. She's like an artist. So I'm really excited to see hers.
And then the opposite of that is like, we ask kids to do it and they're like, meh. But I love it.
No, it makes me happy. I mean, yeah. It looks great.
It's bright. It's expression.
But I wish I would have thought of this years ago. Why have we not been just painting every one of our boxes? And what we've done in the past is we've gone and got them dipped and got them dipped in wax, which is great. I mean, it makes these things like impenetrable and they will last forever, but you can't paint over when they're wax dipped, you can't paint. Paint won't stick to them. So like they look like natural wood and they'll last forever and that's beautiful. But man, I wish I would have known. I would have totally had everybody painting boxes from day one.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like going back and pulling boxes that we did have painted rather than
well, because we bought them from somebody that quit beekeeping and they were painted and they started peeling. We're like, let's paint them.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get, I haven't painted any boxes yet. I need to get like paint. So relaxing.
Yeah. You would love it. You're good at that. I just spray paint like a very basic patterns on them and I still like it, but I want to see you do it. So we've been doing a lot of the painting of boxes and just building up more equipment. And it's one of those things like, thank God we did some work in the wintertime or else, I mean, that would be like priority number one.
That's what winter's for beekeepers.
Yeah. We started a new apiary. I think we might've talked about that last episode, but we
I don't know.
Yeah. Shout out to Lee and Scott and Opportunity Barks, dog training. They have a farm. Like this Be a Farm Dog. It's really, go check out. I think it's Be a Farm Dog is their Instagram handle.
Yeah. And so Opportunity fun. Barks. And, yeah, if you have OP dogs, Barks. They do like live Q&As Thursdays, Opportunity Barks. And Lee is a
wizard.
Animal. Yeah. Wizard. Yeah,
she's a wizard.
She
can think like an animal and then turn it into layman's terms. And it's so clear and concise and just like very simple, but it's not simple. But the way she describes things, and she's just such a like a level-headed dog trainer. There's like no like I've heard dog trainers that have that kind of like eliteness to them that drives me nuts. She's just as down to earth. Like, yeah, I mean, like your dog might be a weirdo, and that's fine. But like maybe you should try this, and that could help. Or like maybe it's doing this, that could help.
Yeah, and she's so calm.
Yeah,
she trained me to train my chickens. I was like, I don't know if they're crazy. She was like, no, you just do this. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, she came over. We were like trying to catch our chickens.
We were catching them in nets.
Like a trout net, fishing yeah, net.
Because we couldn't get them.
They're so spaz. It's like Rocky. And she came over and like, next thing you know, she just has all of them in her hands. Like, this is great.
So we have but bees we started, at their farm.
Yeah, so they have a part of the farm that they don't use that was an old garden area that's fenced in. Perfect place for bees. So we've so far split, I think we've split three hives and brought them over. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're splitting hives, making sure that they are requeened properly, and then bringing them over to a new outyard. And then we talked about it before, but we officially started a new apiary at a nonprofit farm around us called College Settlement Camp in Horsham. It's an overnight camp that about 80% of the campers are underprivileged or below the poverty line. It's like using grants and donations and volunteers to get these kids from the cities into this farm camp for like a 2 week overnight. And it's so rad. And I'm just super excited. So I did on YouTube, I filmed the first inspection that Karen and I did. So shout out to our buddy Steve who caught a swarm and donated it to this program. And shout out to Montgomery County and Chester County Beekeepers of Pennsylvania who both provided a $500 grant to make this happen. But they installed the first swarm. We gave it about a week. We went and checked, found the queen, marked her, and just talked about it. And I'm hoping that they're able to get their campers to look at it. Maybe they have a rainy day and they can pull it up on a projector or who knows. But I'm not going to be always able to there to present to these kids. You know, I'm trying to fit in this apiary into my schedule. But if I can film it on the GoPro and put it on YouTube. So Mind Your Hive's beekeeping. Check that out. We actually caught a swarm there. We'll talk about that in a minute. But when we got finished, we got a call saying, there's a swarm on the property.
Yeah, I was hanging out with the chickens. Craig's like, Kara, we got to hurry up. There's a swarm. I'm like, what are you talking about? On this property? And then some kid was like, there's all these flies over here. And the counselor was like, I'm pretty sure those are honeybees.
And so then and then another counselor was like, I don't know. Or like the director was like, I don't know. That that sounds like maybe there's some yellow jackets or something. There's always some yellow jackets in that area. And then sure enough, we went over. It was honeybees.
Yeah.
And Josh was like, oh, I got to apologize to that counselor. He was right. I felt bad. I didn't take it like he was right.
Yeah. So we went over and it seemed like there was a primary swarm like of wild bees maybe in a tree that had fallen over and they were swarming.
All right. So let's get into swarms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just get into swarms and describe it and then we'll be able to.
Got it. Kind of so people understand. Exactly. That makes sense.
All right, so
okay, so what's a swarm?
So everybody, you know, you hear about swarming, you hear about bee swarms, and it's like this kind of it's kind of like a shocking thing, a bee swarm. You think it's like this stinging ball of bees flying around, but in all actuality, it's pretty chill. It just looks like a lot. So what is a swarm? So bees reproduce in two different ways. So they reproduce in kind of like a normal reproduction way where the queen lays an egg. That egg is fertilized. They feed, the egg hatches into a larva. They feed that larva. 21 days later, that larva, you know, grows up and then emerges as a full-grown worker bee. Or a drone, 24 days, a drone. Or maybe they fed it just royal jelly and turns into a queen. But that's like normal reproduction, you know. Queen goes, gets mated. Gets filled with sperm, uses that sperm to lay fertilized eggs. Boom, that's reproduction. But there's another level of reproduction. And I think you'd refer to it as like colony reproduction versus maybe normal reproduction. But colony reproduction is when the hive has reached a capacity where they feel that they have the resources that they need. Usually at the same time, that also means like the amount of space that they have is about filled. So, you know, you have hive boxes. Say you only have, you know, three boxes on and they filled it all up and they start packing it with honey and they all of a sudden there's not room to lay any more eggs. That colony is going to be like, hey, we're looking pretty good here. So this is the time that we should split this colony in half. And, you know, like 40 to 60% of us are going to leave. We're going to take the queen and we're going to swarm. And when they leave, they're going to start a whole new colony. So pretty much every beehive has one queen. So, you know, they take that queen, they're starting a whole new colony. And it's so fascinating. We've caught about half a dozen or so swarms this year.
Yeah, we're having like a normal day. We're doing something, and all of a sudden, it's like, we gotta go get a swarm.
Yeah, you get that text, and it's like, hey, I got a swarm. And like, all right, send me a picture. Send me a video like, oh, it's a swarm. Let's go.
And then everything gets thrown off.
Yeah. I mean, I have like a bug out bag for swarms.
Box,
like a
box. Yeah.
And it's just like I grab this box, throw it in the car, throw my veil in, like throw a temporary cardboard box that we can house the bees in. And we just run, maybe bring a ladder. We try to get some information on it. But it's cool. It's like through the grapevine, you know, it's always like somebody's like, oh, I think my friend Greg keeps bees or, you know, Greg, I think Kara keeps bees. Why don't we call her up?
Well, and I think it's important because it is through the grapevine, it doesn't need to be always. I mean, it depends on where you live and the Beekeepers Association near you. But if you look up swarms and beekeepers associations near you, a lot of times they have a list of people that you can call. Like yeah. Montgomery County Beekeepers Association has, I think Chester County Beekeepers Association has,
I'm sure they do,
a list of names. So, you know, you can Google that kind of information.
Yeah, I mean, our buddy Bruce just has like a PennsylvaniaSwarm.com or something. He's a website that when you Google swarming in Pennsylvania or in whatever area of Pennsylvania he lives kind of close to us, his little website pops up, and I just saw today, he's on like 20 or 25 swarms he's caught so far this year. And I mean, we've turned a couple down just because we've been busy or I've been at work, but he said he's turned down like another 20.
Wow.
So he's like, I could have been at 40 or 50, which is interesting because I don't think a new beekeeper should ever buy a package of bees. Package of bees is typically coming from like Florida, Georgia, Kentucky. They're just putting X number of pounds of bees, like 2 or 3 pounds of bees into a box. They're not even all from the same hive. They take a queen that's in a cage, they put it in, and they ship the box through the mail. And you're not getting bees that have proven themselves in your area. You're not getting, you don't really know the genetics of the bees. And it's kind of BS when we're just talking about, it's so easy to catch a swarm. You just need to have a little bit of patience. So like new beekeepers, maybe the idea is like, all right, I'm going to get a mentor and I'm going to set up a swarm trap and I'm going to try to learn as much as I can. And if I get one in my swarm trap this year, great. If not, I've started to know some people in the beekeeping world and I'll be able to buy a nuke next year, meaning an overwintered hive that in the springtime gets split and you're able to buy hives that have proven themselves. They've survived over winter. And that is, to me, being a smart beekeeper, it's like, you know, work hard versus work smart. Work smart, get local bees, and even better, get free bees, catch a swarm.
Yeah,
you know, put packages, a little bit of effort into it, but stop buying packages.
You can buy nukes from people.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. You get involved with the Beekeepers Association, you get involved, you have somebody that's your mentor, you'll be able to get a nuke, you know. But we made the mistake of year one, we ordered 2 packages of bees. You know, we talked about it in episode one. They showed up dead through the mail. It was like a traumatic start to our beekeeping. So feel free to ask us questions. You know what? A lot of the people that listen to this aren't beekeepers. And a lot of them are at this point are just friends of ours. But I have to say, it's been really touching and like really nice because, I mean, all right, we're a year and a half into this pandemic. There's so many people we haven't seen in way more than that. But I've had a lot of people hit me up and be like, you know, I listened to the podcast. It was so nice. It felt like you and Kara were hanging out in our car or hanging out in our living room and just like hearing you guys talk. It like, you know, it's touching and like we really like it. And we've got some really nice feedback. And that was cool.
Yeah.
It's like something I didn't really expect. Just people like that don't keep caring to listen to us. But
well, bees are fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
Yeah. Bees are fascinating. So there's 2 different types of swarms. So the first wave, they'll take about, like you said, 40 to 60% of the hive.
Up to 70, I've read about.
With the mated queen, and they leave. But before they leave, they create these swarm cells. And swarm cells, you know that they're swarm cells because they're at the bottom of the frame. And they're large. Queen cells are large cells. And so there can also be secondary, third, I don't even, fourth.
So say the hive decides they want to swarm. They're going to make a bunch of these swarm cells. Ideally, what happens is the first queen that emerges, so this virgin queen emerges from her cell, and she's going to go and assassinate all the other cells. She's going to literally chew out a spot like at their head, and she's going to sting them and kill them before they emerge.
Because queens don't die when they sting.
Yeah, they don't have a barb in their stinger, so the stinger doesn't stay. So they're able just to skeek, skeek, do a little shivving. Not skeet, skeet.
Yeah.
Skeek, skeek.
Okay.
That was like my shiv sound. Oh, okay. Like prison shiv style. It's kind of what's happening.
Big difference.
Big difference. But if they're not able to do that, they battle to the death with another virgin that has emerged. But if too many emerge, all of a sudden, one of them might rally some troops, and next thing you know, another 25% of your hive just bounced with a virgin queen, and that's what we catch more than anything.
And they're smaller swarms too.
Yeah, because the first swarm, 50% of the bees left, so there's only half the bees there to begin with, and then maybe half of those at most, but probably even less than that, are going to leave. So at most, you're going to get maybe 25% of that original hive, but probably closer to like 10, 15, 20% total.
So as you can imagine, as a beekeeper, you want to prevent swarming, because when your bees swarm, you lose your bees. And right now, like May to June is prime.
Well, it depends on the weather. This year, May to June. Last year, it was April 1st.
Yeah, right. It was
going off.
Well, and that's the whole thing, is you don't beekeep by the calendar year. You beekeep by the weather.
Which is usually directly related to the flora, you know, what's blooming, which is determined by the weather.
Yeah. So you really want to try and prevent swarming from happening, because, again, during swarm season is prime honey flow.
So, Kara, how do you prevent swarming?
Oh, lots of ways. I think it's important to start off with understanding what triggers swarms. So there's like three primary things that trigger swarms. The first one is less queen pheromone. So the bees are not really, they could have an old queen.
Yeah, queen starts getting a little older, or just are they like overcrowded? So yes, her pheromone's not spreading as well?
Okay. Exactly. So when they're overcrowded, the pheromone can't circulate. Or there's nectar. This beer is good. What is it? Fermentary Form?
Yeah. Shout out to our boys over at Fermentary Form in Philadelphia. This is Formation. So this is one of their oak wine barrel aged. I think it's like a year in barrel. I would refer to it as a Saison, but
it's funky.
Golden ale.
Yeah, it's good.
This beer is awesome.
There's nectar in the brood chamber. So the brood chamber is where they lay eggs. It's usually in the bottom three boxes if you look at a hive. And if they don't have enough room and they start storing nectar in the brood chamber, then the queen doesn't have room to lay, and they're like, we got to get out of here.
So you kind of refer to that as honey bound. They get honey bound. There's nectar being, you know, fermented into honey that's taking up too much space, and they're bound by it.
Yeah. Well, and it also annoys me. Like when I'm at farmers markets, people say just like that I'm stealing honey, that it's abuse.
Oh, you steal honey from the bees?
Yeah.
Listen, do I punch you in your face?
No, but like a lot of times you need to take honey from the bees. You also need to leave them enough, and you don't take too much. But oftentimes we take honey because we have to take honey because we have to create room for them to lay eggs.
And the most recent research out there has shown that almost 80% of swarms die before they're able to live a full year. So 80% of wild swarms. So swarm does not get caught by Greg and Kara. It goes up into some tree, or it goes into some abandoned building, or it goes into your chimney and you don't even know it. 80% of those die. So it's funny that these people think they're saying save the bees, yet they're criticizing us for taking honey because they don't understand the game. And it's just ignorance.
Yeah.
And you try to educate them, but honestly, those people that are saying that, they're not trying to be educated. They think they're the smartest person at that farmer's market, guaranteed.
Well, and also that's why we're talking about this, so that people can understand. And that save the bees doesn't even mean honeybees.
So when the space is filled and they start encroaching into where the queen wants to be laying eggs, and they're storing, the foragers that are out collecting that nectar and collecting the pollen, they start coming back and they're realizing, wait, there's no room to store this. It's time for us to stop foraging and start scouting new locations. So those foragers turn into scout bees. Foragers are the oldest bees in the hive. They literally, the last stage of life before honeybees die is they become foragers.
And they work themselves to death.
Yeah, exactly. They have like a finite amount of energy. They work themselves to death, but they're going to spend their last days going and scouting for locations. And this is like the most fascinating thing that I think about bees. First is that an unfertilized egg turns into a male. Bonkers. Blows my mind how that works. It's so nuts. I mean, I'm sure somebody would mention like diploids and they'd use some like biology terms on me, but I can't fathom. It doesn't work in my head that can be a thing.
I just made up a term.
Oh, it's a real term, but I don't know what it means. Like
an exercise.
You're a diploid.
Yeah, probably.
So these foragers turn into scout bees. So this is so cool. So Tom Seeley is kind of like the modern day, like more expert on swarming. Dr. Tom Seeley did a lot of work at Cornell, I believe. He's from Ithaca area. of New York. And he's got two books, Honeybee Democracy and a more recent one that's called The Lives of Bees, I think. Lives of Bees. So Honeybee Democracy, it's just that these foragers go out, they become scouts, they find locations, they come back to the hive, and they like present the case of like, I found the best spot. And they do it by doing the waggle dance. We've talked about it a couple times, but the bees literally have a figure eight dance. They're shaking their booties. They're doing this figure eight. How like vibrant they're dancing, how fast they're doing it, and how long they do it determines how great they think the site is, which is also interesting because they have like an innate sense of what is a good site versus an okay site versus a not worth dancing for site. And the other bees, in the darkness of the hive, mind you,
yeah,
using this like little bone, I think it's called the Johnson bone.
Is it?
Just Kara's maiden name is Johnston, so I always remember, I think it's the Johnson bone. It's like in their ear or something that senses vibration. So they hear or sense or see this dance, and then they're like, all right, that girl is dancing hard. She's got her boogie down. Let's go check out her site. So that bee that had seen a different site will be like, all right, I'm going to check out. We always refer to the dancer as Angela for some reason, just the name. Shout out to Steve Wilde was like, Angela came and I saw Angela scouting the spot and hopefully she goes back to the hive and dances really well. We caught a swarm at his house a couple weeks ago and he's got another one in our swarm trap right now. I'm going to go check out tomorrow. But so Angela goes and checks out a spot and then she's going to come back. And if she likes it more than the previous spot, she's going to dance the same dance. So all of a sudden, so the beginning, the hive, and I don't think anybody has figured out like how they just like come to this conclusion and the pheromones that are telling them it's time to swarm. It's time to go scout locations. But say when they first start doing it, there's like 20 locations and you have 20 scout bees doing different dances. And then all of a sudden you've got 10 different dances going on. And all of a sudden you've got 5 different dances going on until ideally all of the bees are doing the same dance and they're going, yep, Angela's spot is the one. Everybody, we're all on the same page. And then it's like, all right, let's get into formation. And some really cool stuff happens where they heat themselves up in a certain way. And then boom.
They eat a lot of honey.
Yeah, they bring a lot of honey with them. So when they get to their location, they have food for the queen. But for themselves, I mean, they need energy to fly.
And to make wax.
And to convert convert that honey in their stomachs into wax. So they need energy to do anything and they need to build comb. So they're going to make a ton of wax, which is cool. When you catch a swarm, you put blank empty frames in there that don't have comb on them yet. And they build out so quickly.
Cause they have to, nowhere to lay. They have nowhere to store. So they just go right to it.
So Kara, it's fun. Kara and I took an intermediate class like 5 years ago in our second or third year beekeeping, we took this intermediate class and
confused the hell out of me.
Yeah, it was just the teacher was not good.
No.
I'll go so far to say he was terrible.
Yeah, terrible. I would say terrible.
And we just
terrible.
I mean, yeah, terrible. Just terrible. We went to like two or three of like the five or six.
I'm like more confused. I feel like I know less now than I did. Yeah,
and this guy would come in and be like, let's just ask me questions. I was like, dude, that's not a class. Like, come on, you're a jerk. But it's excited. There's this amazing teacher, Dr. Vincent Aloyo, that's teaching that same class this year for our Beekeepers Association. And Kara was like, I'm doing it. So she's taking that class, which means I'm kind of taking the class because I get to like watch it in the background.
10 pages of notes every class.
So much that the teacher was like, hey, I know Kara takes notes. I wasn't sure where I left off last class. Can she tell me?
Exactly.
And I was like, yeah, I'll tell you the whole page of notes that she took on your last topic. But where was I going with that?
I don't know.
So
intermediate class.
Oh, so we learned and it's great. Like you think you know a lot and then you just hear these little tidbits, but it was a really interesting thing. So they grab all that honey from their original hive and they go fly to their new hive and maybe you catch them before they've gotten to their final location or maybe at that location you're able to capture them. And a lot of beekeepers say, all right, let's, you know, feed them, give them syrup, give them 1-to-1 sugar to water ratio syrup. But here's the deal. You don't know exactly where that hive came from, and you don't know why exactly they left. You think it's swarming, but maybe it was a bad, maybe it was a diseased colony and they're absconding from the colony, or maybe, who knows, something happened and they're bouncing, or maybe they are swarming, but there were some bad pathogens in that hive. Well, there's certain infections, so European foul brood is one of them, that the spores will come with them in that honey. And if you start feeding them syrup, they will not consume their honey. They will store it and they'll just eat the syrup, which means those spores will continue in the new hive. However, if you give them a few days to eat those stores, when they digest the honey, it gets rid of them.
I forgot that he said that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you just mentioned
it. Yeah. So like I used to catch a swarm and immediately be like, give it syrup. Let's make it as happy as possible. Let's make them feel like they're, you know, in the best location. And now it's like, nope, give them a couple days. Then maybe we give them some syrup. But that was just, I love just when you learn something, when you think like, swarms, we've caught so many, like we got this down. Always something.
Oh, always something. So, okay. So in order to prevent swarm triggers, you want to optimize pheromone circulation. And one of the ways that you do this is you really want to anticipate crowding. So you go into a beehive, it seems like everything's good, but when you look at the frames, if there's cap brood, so cap brood means that the larva, the pupa is capped and
it's in its final stage before emerging, basically. Yeah.
And so one side of each frame will hatch 1,800 new bees.
Yeah.
So you have to really think about that and add boxes and anticipate how many bees are going to come out.
We have a couple hives that are just huge. I mean, they're 6 boxes stacked. We're in the middle of May, and every time we go in, I mean, we're going in about once a week to our home apiary, a little bit less in our out yards, but every time we're looking and going, and Kara went in by herself the other day because I was working, and she texted me like, I can't believe hive five, no swarm cells.
Yeah, I went in, I got everything ready to split the hive, find the queen, make nukes. And
yeah, and there's genetics. We mentioned in a previous episode, I think there's genetics of it's 2 of our queens now that came from the same lineage, and they are known swarmers. And sure enough, they were the first ones with swarm cells. Now, here's what's cool. Our goal this year was to double the amount of hives that we have. So we know we wanted to split these hives, but we want to be as natural as possible, to an extent. So when the bees decide it's time to swarm, they make those swarm cells. Some studies have shown that a better queen comes from a swarm cell versus there's a way that you can do a split that's just like a straight up walk away split. You just split the hive in half, take half, move it to a new apiary or take a new location, let them build a queen. But here's the deal. The boxes you take that don't have a queen, after a day or two, the queen pheromone goes away and they go, holy shit, we don't have a queen. It's an emergency. And they start making what's called emergency queen cells, not just swarm queen cells. And it kind of makes sense that maybe they're not being as selective as you'd want them to be in picking the perfect egg, or, you know, being able to feed the perfect amount of royal jelly because they're in emergency mode. So I don't think the queens in emergency mode end up being as good.
I think the swarm queens are better. The cells are smaller.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
So we like to see, okay, they just made a swarm cell. It's time for us to split that hive. And that's when we will take the queen and we'll take some bees with that queen and move her to a different hive.
And cut out swarm cell. Cut out. Leave the best swarm cells.
Yeah, we'll leave two or three of the ones we. And maybe they aren't the biggest and fattest, but they're the ones we think look the best. And it's hard to describe the parameters that make sense in that regard. You just kind of know. But there's ones that you go like, man, that's big, but it's kind of wonky.
Yeah.
Let's cut it out. So you leave 2 or 3 at most. That way, there's not going to be that secondary So, you know, a bunch of virgins aren't going to hatch out, and then maybe some leave with some bees. Hopefully one hatches out, is able just to kill the other two, or maybe there's a little bit of a fight that happens.
So,
but that you're still relying on those queens to emerge, and then they have to get mated. And last week we did some splits 2-3 weeks ago, and last week we had virgins emerge, and we're not positive if they were properly mated, or maybe they got eaten by a bird, or maybe they got lost, or who knows.
Well, because I went in one hive, they had a mated queen, and then I went back and she's not in there. And I don't know if she went out for a second mating flight and got eaten or never came back, but it's so frustrating.
Frustrating.
Like, we got a mated queen.
But we had like really cold, abnormally cold weather last week, so they might have gotten stuck, or they made a gun like, oh, we got to get mated. And gone out in not that good of a day where there wasn't a lot of drones flying. Who knows?
Yeah, it's
the way. So beekeepers, the way to test for that. So say you know that you have a queenless hive, or you're not sure if you have a queenless hive. Take a frame from another hive of fresh eggs, and put it in that hive that you think suspect might be queenless. Come back a week later or a few days later. And if they are in fact queenless, they will start making those emergency queen cells, and that's the immediate way you know. If there's a virgin in the hive and she just hasn't been mated yet, or maybe there's a mated queen and you just didn't see eggs yet, they'll go about their regular business and raise those bees in a normal fashion. But if they are queenless, they will start making those cells, and that's how you know. And it also helps protect keeping those brood pheromones in the hive so they don't turn into laying workers, which is a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah.
Basically a ticking time bomb for a hive where they're essentially killing themselves.
And it can take the queen, even if she's mated, it can take her 2-3 days to start laying, just kind of figuring out what the heck she's supposed to do now. So back to just, you know, figuring out this whole swarm triggers and preventing swarms, especially when you're in a hive that is just booming and there's so many bees, instead of checking every single frame, an easy way to do it is take the box, flip it on its side, smoke the bottom, and look and see, are there swarm cells?
Because those swarm cells are going to be made on the bottom of the frames, when you flip that box and look underneath it, it's very easy to spot if there's swarm cells hanging from the bottom of the frames.
Yeah. So then you can, you know, check inside, see if there's eggs. If you see royal jelly, get to it. They are making queen cells. If the cells are already capped,
the queen's probably gone.
Yeah. You probably missed it.
If you see capped cells and you find the queen, grab her because she's leaving real soon.
And if you see capped cells, look for, oh no, never mind. Forget what I was going to say. Forget it.
A couple other ways, just prevention wise. So, when we came out of winter, some of our hives were doing better than others. We stole some brood from these booming hives and fed them to some smaller hives. And it helps with that population. It helps even things out. We make sure that we're constantly putting in new frames, having them build out new frames, making sure they have space, which is why some of these already have six boxes on them this early. It's because we want to make sure they have the space, because if they feel crowded, that's when the foragers are going to go, we're now scouts, let's find a new location. Let's talk real quick about just some of these swarms we've caught, because I think each one is interesting, and I think there's a couple points that could be interesting. Did you have anything else that you wanted to touch on with the control or prevention?
No, I don't think so. I just thought it was interesting. Dewey Karen talked about, if we talk about like
Dewey Karen, shout out University of Delaware. I mean, he's retired now, I think, but we listened to one of the beekeepers associations in Ohio had a Zoom meeting that we were able to be a part of when he spoke. And I really appreciated his presentation. Dewey Karen is the man.
Yeah. He always has good stuff to say. But you know, just going back to, you beekeep by the weather, by the season, I think that's a better way to say it, by the season and by the weather. And just when you think about swarming, you know, everything is moving. Fill her up.
That just sounds good.
You know, the plants, everything is moving forward, moving up as the seasons go up into the days are getting longer to the summer solstice. And the summer solstice is the longest day of the year. And then which is on June 20th this year. And then after that, everything, the days are getting shorter. You know, the blooms are getting less. Everything is kind of getting more scarce. And so that's when swarm season is really ending.
Right, right, right. And then it kind of comes back in that like late summer, right before fall in our area. You get a little bit of a nectar flow and all of a sudden you'll start seeing some swarms late in the year.
But it depends on where you're at.
And those are like really small usually. But
I just love that it really does all revolve around the earth.
The sun.
Yeah.
All right. So this was a cool swarm. So we get a call. There's a swarm about 20 minutes from us. This is the first one. This is probably like April, who knows, 15th, let's just call it. And we get the call, and it's a woman whose elderly mother has saw this swarm, and it was low. It was low to the ground. It was like in a bush, like a little tiny bush in her yard. And she sends me a picture. I'm like, man, that's a weird swarm. Like thinking in my head, like they're just pausing there and they're going to move on. Sure enough, we get there and the woman, the daughter and her brother are there and they're both like in their 40s. And they're like, oh, my brother is like down the road, maybe like 1,000 yards.
Watching it travel.
And he's been watching it bounce from like all over the neighborhood. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Usually if the queen maybe needs to take a rest, they'll pause for like up to an hour and then move to a different location. But it's usually not like bing, 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 bing in like a very small area. So we get to the final spot before we caught them. And I'm like, all right, Kara, why don't you knock on the door of this person's house? Like they're in this ornamental tree in their backyard. I'm like, why don't you knock on the door, introduce yourself, make so they don't just like see us out there and get weirded out. Little bit of a language barrier when she knocks on the door, but this woman is like,
I said to her, I was like, yeah, we're gonna do this thing, is that okay? And I'm turning around just guess like thinking she's gonna say yes. Normally people are like, yes, this is yeah, so cool,
thank you,
can
so
I videotape
much.
It yeah. She was like, no. And I turned around back, I was like, no. She was like, no. I'm like, yeah, no, yeah, we're getting
we're gonna get
the bees.
So then Kara comes down and she's like, this lady doesn't want us on her property.
Well, she was okay. I was like, she's not happy about it. But so then you went over and schmoozed her.
I went over and I pulled the whole like, hey, I'm Greg, vice president of Montgomery County Beekeepers. We got a call. Like, we're here to save the bees. I'm like, you know, she's like, she's like, well, I'd rather have them. Aren't bees good? I want them. I'm like, do you want them to move into your chimney? Okay, cool. Let's catch them. Yeah. And also, they're going to die. They're probably going to die. This isn't a good place for them. Like, they're not moving into a tree cavity. They're like, you know, building on just a branch here.
So
and then she kind of also was like, oh, will they just move on? And I'm like, lady, I'm catching these bees.
Yeah.
So she was, the husband came out and then they were like, okay, fine. And then they like locked their windows and went inside and we never saw them again. I think the important point is like, go introduce yourself and explain nicely and know that people maybe won't have the reaction you think they will.
Yeah.
But make sure you're courteous. Like, you know, I think things would have been a lot different in that situation if we wouldn't have gone up and introduced ourselves. And all of a sudden, I mean, shit, that lady might've called the cops on us.
Yeah. Yeah. She was not trusting. Well, and the interesting thing is you told me later is you found
that. I was
going
to say
yeah,
that.
Tell
yeah.
them.
So upon inspection of the queen a few days later, she had a tear in one of her wings. So I took a picture of her and I zoomed in and I could see this very clear tear, which I think is the reason that they were bouncing just up 50 yards, 100 yards.
I think
she was having a hard time flying.
Yeah, makes
which
sense.
Luckily for us that happened because they probably would have bounced from that bush. Or maybe never even have gone there, and they would have bounced way further away.
Probably why they were on the ground, too.
Yeah. Another swarm we caught in Philadelphia, and this one's on our YouTube page. We did a cool video on it. But we put a swarm trap up very early in April, and our buddy, he saw a ton of scout bees, so a lot of Angelas checking out the swarm trap, and he was like, dude, there's so much activity. I think we're going to catch a swarm today. And then he was walking around the property they live on and they found this swarm and it was by, there's a beekeeper that has a hive. Unfortunately, he doesn't check it very often. But there's a beekeeper, the hive, and that hive swarmed and he sent me a video and it's you see the waggle dancing happen, you hear them, and you watch them in like a matter of 30 seconds, just this huge cluster. I'd call it maybe 7 pounds of bees, just up and vanishes.
Yeah,
and then he followed the swarm. So you could see this cloud of bees, and he followed it to this beautiful oak tree about 500 yards from there, about 35 feet up in like a perfect, he called it a Winnie the Pooh hole. I mean, like that perfect knot hole in a tree. And I mean, there's like power lines going through it. I can't climb up there and get it. I'm more worried about the power lines than anything else. But
plus, when bees are in knots like that, you can't get them.
Real difficult to get. Yeah. But I said to him, I said, all right, but here's the deal. There's going to be another swarm that I know that there's going to be a secondary swarm coming. And you almost caught this one. You're going to catch it when the secondary swarm happens. Sure enough, 10 days later, Greg, I'm seeing more bees come in. I think they're in here for good. And it was, they came in and it was like a nasty night. And the next morning they were still there and we came and captured them. Such an easy capture. I had caught a swarm in Delco, Delaware County, or like Narberth. It's right on the Montgomery County, Delaware County border outside of Philadelphia. And it was outside of a law firm. And one of the lawyers or somebody that works there, we got put in touch with. And I'm texting with him at like 10 o'clock the night before. And he sends me a picture and he goes, I think our neighbors are beekeepers. And he like sends me a picture of the map and he circles his house and he goes, I think this guy's a beekeeper. And I was like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like, I'm going to drive out there. Like, maybe they belong to him. Maybe they don't. I was like, but who knows? Sure enough, like while I'm catching, it's 7 a.m. I'm catching these bees, like 40 degrees. And the guy comes out to go to work and he comes over and he's standing next to me. He's like, oh, you're catching a swarm, huh? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you live right there? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, are you a beekeeper? Because they said that there was a beekeeper next door. And it was like real awkward. He's like, yeah. But my bees aren't here. I keep them somewhere else. And I was like, all right. And I think maybe there was a chance like he's not allowed to keep bees in that house. Or maybe the township doesn't allow it. And he was worried about it because he was acting super shady. And if I was a beekeeper and I saw somebody catching a swarm, I'd be like excited for them. And he was like not excited at all. So I think he came out and was like, oh, shit, my bees swarmed. I didn't know it. I just lost half my bees.
Yeah, it's not going to be a good feeling.
Meanwhile, I'm all giddy, like, I'm catching bees at 7 a.m. That was awesome.
I watched the video of it. You just like snip, 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 snipped it off a bush. It was super easy. Put the branch in the box and that was it.
Yeah, the swarm we were catching at the camp's college settlement camp, Kara's holding this branch and I'm trying to bend it a little bit.
It was dead. So this is what I was talking about earlier. So there's like a fallen tree. We think there's wild bees inside. They swarm right outside the tree to this dead branch that's like just a little. I mean, you're 6'6". It was just like just.
It was probably like 8.5 feet. Yeah. You know, it was like my tippy toes. I could just touch the top of the bee cluster.
And the branch was dead, like dead. So I'm trying to hold. I know this thing's going to break. And you just bend it a little bit. And all the bees just shower you, like come down like in a shower, break the swarm and just dump all over you. And there were kids there and they went running and they're like, yeah, can we just like hang out over, can we do the ropes course instead of this?
Luckily, like swarms are pretty docile. You have to try to get stung in a swarm. The only times I really get stung is if I'm like squishing a bee by accident
or you like, shake it a little fling aggressive. At you.
Yeah. But I mean, I was covered with bees. I was just wearing a veil and a short sleeve shirt and I had no stings or anything like that. The first thing I say to people when they say, hey, there's a swarm in my yard is I'm like, just so you know, they're very docile. You don't have to worry about them attacking you. I'm like, you know, give them distance, but you'll be totally fine.
Yeah. The other day we were catching a swarm from a beekeeper that his bees were swarming and he is like the most interesting person. And he like, was like, yeah, stick your hand in the bee swarm. And I was like, I always wanted to do this.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah. And so I did. I was trying to grab them, but I wasn't sure. So I just kept sticking my hand in the bees and then like combing them out. And then they were
petting
like,
the bees.
Pretty much.
It was still cool to watch.
Oh, yeah. It was super awesome experience.
So it was really interesting. We think there was this fallen tree and the bees were living in that tree and then they decided to swarm. So they recluster after I got the bee shower. The golden bee shower, they almost immediately over maybe like 5 minutes, they reclustered. So we put a box right next to them with a little bit of the swarm scent in it and a frame, hoping they would go into the box. And while they're there, we're looking to see if we can find a queen. And sure enough, it's like, there's the queen. It took me three tries to get her with this little queen clip. I was trying to capture her and I kept missing. She was very elusive.
She kept
dodging into it. So luckily in the third try, I catch her, and then we put the queen, she's in this cage, we put her in that box, and usually what will happen is you put her in the box, the bees go like, wait, where'd the queen go? Oh, she's in this box. They start going in. While we're waiting, they all leave.
They tried to swarm, and they didn't realize she wasn't there.
So I think what was happening, our current theory is that fallen tree hive, they were all meeting right outside the hive. Kind of, it's like, hey, let's meet. It's like when you go on a work trip or something, you're like, hey, let's meet outside the hotel at 7. We'll all like make sure we're all here, and then we'll go to dinner together. You know, like they all met right outside on this branch, and then we capture the queen. We set her into this box, and they bounce. And we were like, wait, I think they're leaving. Wait, and like literally within 30 seconds, there was no cluster at all. They were gone. And then over the next like 5-ish minutes, they all came back. But we went, okay, you know what? There's a lot of bees flying around right now. We just left the box with the queen in it, closed it up, had one entrance open, came back at 9 at night, and they were all inside and tucked away. Right there. We would have, if ended up being a virgin queen, so it was, this, I think, a secondary swarm, but whatever. If we wouldn't have caught her.
Or if we didn't break the cluster and have them dump all over you, and true, then they had to reconvene.
True. Maybe we put a little hitch in there. Yeah.
Although these were all easy swarms compared to the one where I had to climb up in the cedar tree.
Oh my gosh. That was the best.
I was up there for like an hour and a half.
Kara was straight up like a master tree climber, up 30-ish. I mean, 20 feet via ladder and another like 10 or 15 climbing into this tree.
Trimming. It was so calming. It was such it was so heavy.
She walked down with this pretty big swarm. Oh man, we should post that picture on Mind Your Hive's Instagram. Cool. That was a really cool picture of you. So we don't want to talk too much longer. We're almost at an hour here. But I do want to say one thing. This is interesting, and I please like ask us questions, and some people have started reaching out and saying, "Hey, this is the situation I'm in. What would you do?" But I have to say, like, we're putting ourselves out there and we're showing how we beekeep, and we're showing, you know, just like our techniques and what we think is right, but we're always constantly learning. But it's hard to talk to beekeepers about what you're doing and what your technique is, because it seems to me like every beekeeper thinks that they are doing everything perfectly correctly. And there's like a lot of judgment in beekeeping
there's a lot of judgment everywhere, yeah, especially these days.
And it's tough because like I'm constantly just seeing people just like critiquing other people and like telling people they're doing things wrong.
Ask two beekeepers, get three answers.
Yeah. But like, here's the deal. And this is just life lesson. If somebody's not asking for your opinion, maybe don't give your opinion. I actually had to say to a beekeeper the other day, I had to say like, man, there's nothing ruder than getting advice from somebody that you're not asking for advice from. Hint, hint, you're being a dick. And I don't know if they understood, but they stopped. But I was like, kind of like, I was so fed up with this.
That's a pretty clear message.
Yeah, I was so fed up with this guy, like rudely trying to tell me what he does when he has no clue how we roll.
Well,
there's also so many factors.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. So many factors.
One technique here or there is really a part of this whole grand plan that you have. So if you like to do something one way and I like to do it.
And listening to people talk about things we're in Pennsylvania. We have certain circumstances. We have really wet. We live in a wet property. Like, you know, you can't just pick and choose kind of like, oh, this sounds good, I'll do that. It's really got to be a whole picture kind of thing.
Yeah. So again, you know, just maybe don't give unsolicited advice in any regard, but I think beekeeping especially. And I hope you're listening to this. And if you have a differing opinion, like I'm more than happy to talk about it. Like I have no problem if you say, hey, why do you do it this way? rather than I do it this way. Why do you do it the way you're describing? Not I'm going to tell you how I do things, because you know what? I don't really care. But if you're presenting it with like, hey, this is why I do it and let's talk about it, like there's so much learning there. So just maybe think about things the way you present them to people, because I'm just witnessing it all the time. And oh, it's driving me nuts lately.
All right.
And I always end on a pedestal, yes. Mad, angry rant, apparently.
Apparently.
Just kidding. I love everybody.
All right.
I especially love this fermentary form.
Yeah, the beer's formation. Good. Drink more.
This beer rocks. Well, as always, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. If you got this far, you're a total rock star, and we really appreciate you. Follow Mind Your Hives Beekeeping on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. Carajo Skincare, our organic skincare company. Check us out. We got a lot of good things coming.
And plant native plants and pull up your invasive.
And there's ticks are still cranking out there. So get some bug repellent. Carajo Skincare bug repellent.
Tick repellent.
Awesome. Yeah. It is bug and tick repellent. It is so good.
All right. Till next time.
Till next time. I'm Greg.
I'm Carajo.
Thanks again for listening, y'all.